The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
From the Blue Cliff Record, Case 18. Emperor Suzong asks National Teacher Weizhong, "After you die, what will you need?" The national teacher said, "Build a seamless monument for me." The emperor said, "Please tell me, Master, what the monument would look like." The national teacher was silent for a long time. Then he asked, "Do you understand?" The emperor said, "I don't understand." The national teacher said, "I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching, Dan Yuan, who is well versed in this matter. Please summon him and ask him about it." After the national teacher passed on, the emperor summoned Dan Yuan and asked him what the meaning of this was. Dan Yuan said, "South of Xiang, north of Tan, in between there's gold sufficient to a nation. Beneath the shadowless tree, the community ferryboat. Within the crystal palace, there's no one who knows." So when we first hear a koan, it may be dark to us. It may be that we don't understand it right away. And part of the job of a teacher is to explicate, to point, to help us in our understanding. And in order for a teacher to do that, and I'm speaking for myself here, we have to go to the place where we're also puzzled by the koan. Because if we start from a place of, "I know all about this," we may not know how to do the pointing. And this is what my process has been like with this koan. I've worked with it with myself, of course, when I was first studying koans, and then again with my second koan teacher, and then again with many students. And every time I read it, I'm a different person. Every time I work with it, I'm not the same person who worked with it previously. So in one sense, I could give a talk about the same koan over and over and over again. But I do like to keep a little bit of the entertainment factor alive. Although there are teachers who do this. They have one thing that they do, or one thing that they say, which for them has become the main way of understanding these teachings, the Dharma, the great way, the way that points to a kind of liberation that is unimaginable to the ordinary mind, to what we sometimes called the consensus mind. We say that there's a consensus reality, a reality we've all agreed to. You're you and I'm me. I have this description of myself. I have this history. You have that history. We have this relationship. The world is a certain way. In Zen practice, when it's done with a kind of sincerity that's beyond trying, a sincerity that is deeply, deeply felt, the most important thing in the world, the most important thing we've ever done is to practice the way. When that is happening for us, something begins to loosen in us. With all these forms and practices that are traditional in Zen and that are different from Zen community to Zen community, and definitely are different from Buddhist community to Buddhist community, we may get lost. in how do you do this, how do you do that, or Yoki, as David Roshi was saying last night, is maybe fussy. Maybe all of Zen is a little bit fussy. But beyond the fussiness is some way that we can learn to be human beings together. One teacher that I worked with for a short time said that Zen was like a dance. She herself had been a dancer, a ballet dancer, and had ordained and gone to Japan and learned all these forms. And I went to a retreat with her. That was the one I mentioned last night, where I had two people on either side of me telling me conflicting information about the Oryoki forms. But she kept saying that this form of practice is like a dance, she herself being a dancer. And I, of course, myself, identifying as a musician, think of it as a great orchestral work, with every single one of us playing our instrument. And there's a certain moment, and we can feel it. It doesn't always happen, but a moment in Kinhin where we find that we are actually one body walking. If we're lost in thought or looking around or not focusing on the person in front of us, that doesn't happen. But there's a certain moment in most sesshins that I've been to, and every sesshin is pretty different from every other one, where something drops away. The narcissism of the self drops away on its own. We can't get rid of it, because if we try to get rid of it, it just gets stronger and begins to fight us, and then we divide our hearts against our own hearts. When that begins to happen, then everything is all over the place. But when things sort of get dropped, when the opinions and the self-cherishing and the other side of self-cherishing, which is self-judgment, they're not that different from each other. When they begin to loosen, when space begins to form between all of these different elements of the mind and the heart and the body, when that dropping away happens, we don't do it. We don't let go of anything. We don't drop anything away. We don't get rid of. We don't fix. Those are clumsy English phrases that don't really point to the actuality of experience. It's not that we do something. It's not that we make the space or we let go. But things just go. They come and they go on their own. We don't have to meddle with that process. In meddling with it, we might want to hold on to some part of our experience. Say we had a really lovely experience sometime during a previous retreat or in our lives, or maybe even this morning or maybe even an hour ago. And we hold on to it because we think, aha, now I get what they're talking about. That was beautiful, the sunlight coming through the window. I did not divide myself from the sound of the truck moving up the road. I was the truck moving up the road, and blah, blah, blah. All of that is lovely. And if we try to let it go, make it go away, and be here in the moment, we miss something, because those things just naturally go. And if we hold on tight to them, then it takes a little bit longer for them to do their natural coming and going. So the practice is so simple. Whether you're doing breath practice or just sitting, whether you're working on a koan, what's most important is this, right now, what's happening now. And this koan is interesting because the characters in it are the Emperor of China and an old Zen teacher and a younger teacher who is the older teacher's disciple, the older teacher's Dharma heir. These three people have these conversations. And if we boil it all down and see what's going on, the emperor, who in those days, this was in the 700s in China during the Tang Dynasty, whether it happened or not, this is the story we tell. This emperor was the son of another emperor, and the father of the current emperor in the story had named this fellow who was called Wei Zhang, to be the national teacher. I sometimes dream that in the United States, the president would name a national Zen teacher. I don't think that's going to happen for some time, if ever. But in those days, Zen was a respected religion, way of living, and the emperor would name national teachers, and this guy was one of many national teachers. Wei Zhang was the Dharma heir of Wei Nung, very famous. We call him the sixth ancestor, after Bodhidharma, that is, the sixth Chinese ancestor. And he wrote, or is purported to have written, an autobiography called the Platform Sutra. It's called that because he was sitting on a platform when he talked it through. In that particular series of writings, which is fascinating to read if you're interested in that kind of thing, he tells the story of his life. We've made some koans up about the story of his life, so you may remember Wei Nung, but I'm not going to talk much about him right now. But he was an illiterate from the south of China, which was kind of the unfashionable place to be from. And he went to the north to meet a teacher and had already awakened on his own by hearing someone quote a teaching. He wasn't a practitioner at the time, according to his own autobiography or whoever wrote it, but he was struck right to the heart. And this is one of the reasons, even though Zen prides itself, you might say, on not clinging to words or letters, this is something Bodhidharma said when he came from India to China and taught a different emperor about what Zen was. Still, we use a lot of words. We have all these koans, and we have the chanting, and we have our liturgy service, and we've kept all of that around because every once in a while, and it happens more than you might imagine, when we've stopped trying to get somewhere, trying to do something, trying to be someone, then there's enough space for some of these words from our ancestors to penetrate our hearts. And that may have happened for you in a liturgy service or reading a book about Zen or hearing a talk like this or someplace. Something really shifted your interior understanding in a way that you couldn't explain. Suddenly something was different. People talk in that moment of the suddenly something is different in many different ways. Colors are different, sounds are different, tastes and smells are different. Something comes into focus, I like to say, being a visual kind of person. Something clarifies, not maybe intellectual clarification, but something becomes so clear. There's a verse in the Gateless Gate collection by Wu Men, who collected that series of 48 cases and wrote a poem for each one. The first two lines of that poem is, because it's so very clear, it takes a long time to realize. And this is it. Once everything clarifies, we realize that it's been like this the whole time, and we have been getting in our own way with all of our ideas about the way things are supposed to be. So in this story, Wei Zhang, who's been appointed by a previous emperor to be the national teacher, and now his son, who's the emperor, is noticing that he's gotten very old. And in some versions of this story, in other collections and other material that's come down to us from the Tang Dynasty, and mostly actually from the following one, because most of these things were written down hundreds of years later. In this story, Wei Zhang was close to death. know, he was very old and probably wasn't feeling so great. And the emperor knew that. And the emperor asked him in a very polite way, not the way we have it translated here. Originally, what the emperor says is, "What should I do for you in 100 years? Because it's very likely that this teacher won't be alive in another 100 years. What should I do for you when you die? How can I do this honoring of my teacher?" And as I looked into this koan just a little bit, I've been stuck. That's the part that penetrated my heart, the sincerity of this emperor. What can I do for you? How can I serve you even after you've died? How can I take care of you when you're not around here anymore? And the teacher shows him. He sits still and doesn't say anything. And of course, that is the greatest teaching. The teaching of Zazen itself. Here we are, sitting here together, and right from the first moment that our Jiki struck the clappers and rang the bells last night, we were in it. It was a sudden shift. We'd all been hanging around and taking care of details and moving in, and then suddenly, boom, just this. Just this stillness and silence. Nothing else. Well, maybe a lot else. Maybe your mind was running a million miles a minute, but frankly, I couldn't see it. All I felt in the room was that sinking in, that utter dedication. And this is what Wei Zhang does when the emperor asks him this question. And then he says, "Do you understand?" Which, of course, is also part of our Zen teaching. This is something very important, the interactions between individuals. A teacher works with a student broadly, the way I am right now. You may think that every word I'm saying is specifically for you, or you may think that you have no idea what I'm talking about. Doesn't matter. This is the Dharma talk version of touching the heart. And then we offer Doksan. We do a lot of individual meetings. Doksan being a word that just means going alone to see the teacher. And this could have been a public thing that was going on where the emperor asks Wei Zhang this question. It could have been private. But Wei Zhang says, "Do you understand?" And that's very important. Do you understand? And we got to love this emperor, because he says, "Nope, I really don't. I don't get it. I don't understand." And luckily, Wei Zhang has a Dharma heir, this guy named Dan Yuan. And he says, "So when the time comes, that is after I die, you go to Dan Yuan and he'll explain it for you." And Dan Yuan in this koan, and actually, in the little we know about him, we don't know very much about him. I did a little checking into the history. He was a Dharma heir of Wei Zhang, but we don't know when he was born or when he died, and there's not that many stories told about him. Most of the stories told about him have to do with his relationship to Wei Zhang. So we don't know what his life was like, but we do know that he didn't answer with silence. He answered with a poem. When we work with this koan formally as koan students, there are a number of checking questions and pointers in it, including from the guy who put this volume, the Blue Cliff Record, together, all kinds of little commentaries. It's quite rich. But I just wanted you to hear Dan Yuan's poem today to start with. He's pointing to something that is the same thing that Wei Zhang was pointing to by not saying anything. And sometimes poetry, as we know, can be like this. There are metaphors in poetry, but even more important, I think, for me, is the pointing to something that can't actually be said in consensus reality language. Poets are not always mystics, and not all Zen teachers are mystics, but many of us are. And what I mean by mystic is that we know that there's a reality beyond the reality that our minds tell us about. Even a reality beyond what our hearts and our bodies tell us. There's something else mysterious beyond this. So here's the poem. He says, first, south of Xiang, north of Tan. And those two places are place names in China. One of them is in the south and one of them is in the north. So Xiang is in the south. So saying south of a southern town and north of a northern place. That's pretty big. That's as big as you can get beyond any kind of ideas of location. Already, Dan Yuan is pointing towards something beyond what we think we know about reality. How could that be? Where is this place that's south of the South Pole and north of the North Pole? Where is it? And then he says, in between, there's gold sufficient to a nation. There are a number of translations of that line. Gold abounds. Everything is filled with gold. There is something that starts to happen to us when we are sincerely sitting, allowing things to come and go. Maybe if we're doing breath practice, returning to the breath, but otherwise, just appreciating that everything that we encounter is the very thing that we're seeking. The Dharma itself is right here. It's not some other place. And sometimes the metaphor of gold is used. There's one Tibetan teacher who tells a story about bringing gold dust from India to Tibet. And when he finally gets it to his teacher, who has assigned him the job of getting this gold dust, the teacher opens the bag that it's in and just scatters it to the winds. Gold everywhere. Nothing to be held on to. Certainly not the consensus reality version of the way we think about gold. But no need to differentiate between the dust motes in the Zendo and sprinklings of gold. Everything is it. But we miss it because we have so many ideas. So in this place, beyond any kind of idea, there's enough gold for everyone. It fills the nation. It fills all the spaces. And then he says, beneath the shadowless tree, the community ferry boat. And this is a lovely pointer to our way of practicing in our tradition, which we call Mahayana, the great vehicle. The great vehicle teachings are about having everyone, with no exceptions, in fact, everything, all beings everywhere, we say, I vow to free them. All beings everywhere are welcome on the ferry boat that takes us from not understanding, being confused, being lost, getting in our own way, to the other shore, the shore of freedom, of openness, of the endless, stopping the endless self-judging and self-promoting. Somehow, when this happens, we may go right back to the other shore and start self-promoting or self-judging again. But there is a moment, a series of moments, many, many, many moments, when there's a release like this. And the metaphor that's used is we go from the shores of delusion to the shores of awakening. So the community ferry boat, Everybody is welcome on this boat. There are no exceptions. Everybody, as Hakuin says in the Song of Zazen, only has to sit once to gain all the benefits from this practice that can be gained. This is not some kind of self-improvement project. This is an offering of the universe to every single one of us. And all we have to do is be still and present and know. And then the last line of the poem is, within the crystal palace, there's no one who knows. Imagine a crystal palace, a beautiful building that is completely transparent. There's nothing to hide any longer when we're in this state. We don't have to get stuck in thinking about who we want to appear to be. And when other people don't see us and layer on all kinds of ideas about who we are, then we can see that as an ordinary thing that human beings do. But this is pointing to something else, something much freer. The crystal palace is transparent. The home of the true self has no walls. As Wu Men names his collection of koans, it's the gateless barrier, the gateless gate. It's right here. Nothing has ever been hidden. And within that crystal palace where nothing has been hidden, there's no one. There's no one who knows. So please get in line. Be one of these people who is not trying hard to know, to show up as someone who already knows everything. And we call these people full cup people because they've done all the reading and the study and the koans, and they come in to Doksan and they already know everything. How would it be to put it all down? How would it be to allow life to unfold without interference? This is the great way. Emperor Suzong asked National Teacher Wei Zhang, after you die, what will you need? The National Teacher said, build a seamless monument for me. The Emperor said, please tell me, Master, what the monument would look like. The National Teacher was silent for a long time. Then he asked, do you understand? The Emperor said, I don't understand. The National Teacher said, I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching, Dan Yuan, who is well versed in this matter. Please summon him and ask him about it. After the National Teacher passed on, the Emperor summoned Dan Yuan and asked him what the meaning of this was, and Dan Yuan said, south of Xiang, north of Tan, in between there's gold sufficient to a nation. Beneath the shadowless tree, the community ferry boat. Within the crystal palace, there's no one who knows. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable and we'll redo the zendo. So have the servers come out in front of the altar. Have our Dharma dialogue. I think most of you know how this works, but you just raise your hand and either Michael or David Roshi or I will respond to you. We get really excited. All three of us will respond to you. So please, anything about the koan, the talk, Sashin, anything that's coming up for you but practice, you're free to ask or comment. Yes, Lara.
I'm just so struck by like the sincerity of the not knowing. You know, it just like even just hearing it today. And then what is received from the not knowing, this beautiful poem, like that has everything, you know. There's just, I mean, there's so much generosity that I feel in this, but it's not anyone really trying to get anything. And that's where it's like flowing so freely, and I'm just so struck by that. Even in like, the emperor is like offering something to this national teacher, but really the emperor gets everything. It's all this like, this lesson and this, you know, so there's just, it just feels like such this flow of not trying to get anything, and yet there's so much that is just so beautifully received.
Yeah, I love that it, the emperor admitting that he doesn't know, and not in the kind of wonderful Zen way, like, but what are you talking about? Right, and that's what moves the story forward. His great resource is his authenticity in I don't get it, not in I'm going to find out how to, you know, but here it is. And lovely that the poem then ends with this other kind of not knowing, we might say. But yeah, great.
And I love that Melissa brought in, started with dance as part, and music, because these two art forms, to me, are this a reflection of this ever-flowing life which we can't grab hold of. No point in a dance or no point in a piece of music can we say, oh yeah, that's it. It's constantly changing and flowing. And so the not knowing is not a state of ignorance or a state of denial. It's just an openness to this constant flowing reality in life that we can't quite grab hold of.
Yeah, I felt it, because then just to not know and go to the person that does know. Oh, there, and there was no resistance. It was just like, oh, sure, I'll go there.
Yeah, what a nice little play that the three of them are putting on together. And beyond death. That was another talk that I didn't give, which was about the relationship between a teacher and a student and carrying this on beyond death. Dan Yuan, he's just, okay. Yeah, now it's my turn. All right. And because there has been some transmission. Yeah, Matt.
Yeah, kind of along the same lines there. I was struck by how he waited. You know, so he says, ask Dan Yuan. And I'm thinking, okay, you got his number? You know, how do I get the number? But instead, it's not until after the teacher dies. And that kind of struck me, like that he sat with that for so long.
Oh, the emperor did.
The emperor.
Yeah. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. That's so cool. Yes, absolutely.
I like cannot relate. Because I feel so impatient to like, so what do I do next? How do I do it better?
Yeah, right.
Let me get it right, you know. Yeah.
And so many of us are in a hurry, aren't we? And what we're usually in a hurry for is some idea of what's going to come next. And we do have to respect the emperor that, so he was devoted to Wei Zhong and waited until he died. And then went on to this other teacher, who was Wei Zhong's Dharma heir. But yeah, you know, in working with koans, and I think you're really demonstrating this, Matt, we have to see these people as reflections of ourselves. And so, you know, wow, I don't have that patience. But you could actually recognize that you do, because it's being mirrored in the emperor. You're the one who noticed it. So there's some way that your patience is implicit in you already. Thanks.
Yeah, I liked the, you talked about the second kind of not knowing that was mentioned. And like I notice in myself this instinct or this urge to like
lay over yet another filter of what I think awakening is, based on some like past experience that I've had, and how that really doesn't get me very far, and how it's like it takes a certain like level of humility from me, which is something I'm always working on, to be like, just sit there and be like, okay, I'm like stuck here. I'm suffering. I'm in pain. Like, I can't just put something over this and make it go away and be perfect.
Yeah, I appreciate you talking about the subtlety of this operation, because it can be easy to think that we have an insight and we think, okay, now I'm clear, right? And then in that moment, we make the musical piece into a note, like, there's the note. And we forget that this is again and again, there's no end to this work. And I think practice is fairly humiliating, right? Because the ego, the self, out of sincere desire to wake up, wants to reify it, to make it real, make it a thing. And so how wonderful that this is not what's wrong with you or with any of us. This is just how it works. And we get to see, and even if we think, oh yeah, I saw that, I know that. No, you get to see it again and again and deeper and deeper. And so nothing wrong in that moment of realizing, but awakening again and again. Okay, this is the head on top of my head, right? And so subtle. We have to be very still and very determined, whatever it is, to let it be. Yeah, well said.
And it strikes me, it's very cool. So Matt, you think of yourself as impatient, you think of yourself as not so humble, Vix. But again, it's the humble one who sees it. It's the patient one who sees it. There's already, this is part of who you are. You are, in fact, humble. But it's not something, we construct selves. And so I think, I'm arrogant, I'm impatient, the list, right? We all have the list. What if that wasn't true? What if it was possible to be all these things? And this is, of course, what koan practice encourages. Can I be all these people? Yes. The answer is yes.
And I appreciate your noticing. I think that is the basis for me. You can see how the mind is constantly scanning for a fixed point to grab hold of, until it realizes that you're not even a fixed point. So there's no place to stand. It's just this constant movement. Just noticing that is enough.
Thank you. Anne.
What strikes me is there's some things you have to know. The whole thing didn't make sense until you described the towns as south and north. And then I was thinking it was a person or something. I didn't know. And we talk about not knowing, but words contain a history and contain other people's minds. And without knowing that, you can't get to things just through yourself. You have to get to them, to me, you have to get to them through the community knowledge and the community trying to pass something along. So not
That's
knowing
right.
is limited.
Well, and of course, not knowing is spoken about a lot in Zen because so many people are stuck in knowing. Right? We've been accumulating information all our lives, no matter how long we've been on the planet. We have a lot of stuff in that little brain of ours. And so this capacity to not know has to be complementary to knowing, right? So it's both, you're absolutely right. And if we favor one over the other, not knowing, it's almost always if we're favoring not knowing, it's an idea about not knowing. It's not true. Not no, it's not true emptying the cup. It really isn't. So you have to know, and you have to authentically not know. Yeah.
And it's helpful to have a cup to take a drink.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, Alan.
Yeah, thank you for your talk. And I'm circling back in a way to Laura's point, because I'm so struck this time around with the reversal at the beginning of the koan, where the emperor says, you know, what can I do for you after you die? And the teacher says, in effect, you know, I'll be dead, I'll be just fine, but let me do something for you. Let me set him on this path. And it's as though he starts him on a treasure hunt and says, Don Juan has the treasure map. And then the treasure, of course, turns out to be not at all what the emperor might have thought. But I love the way that the emperor's kind of tricked into taking the way. And thinking about how we all kind of trick ourselves, or many of us do, when we start the way, we think we'll get, you know, a better self. We think we'll learn to finally be calm and serene. We think whatever we think, and then we find out that the treasure is not that at all.
Mm. Yeah, and the emperor, the teacher, as you say, pointing away from himself, and in some ways helping the emperor make that transition. When we hear the Dharma, we can get quite attached to the person we first hear it from, or who we work with, and think, oh my God, you know, what happens when Paul goes away? You know, what happens when our teacher goes away? And a wonderful pointing of one generation to the next, that it doesn't go away. And in fact, the successor was able to teach the emperor something that his beloved teacher couldn't, right, in this back and forth. So lovely.
And that was exactly the other talk that I wanted to give, partly because I was thinking myself of being in Wei Zhang's position. You know, I'm working as hard as I can to transmit the Dharma, you might say. And then whatever happens after I die, I don't know if the Dharma's going to continue. I really don't. I mean, my Dharma, if there's a my connected to it. So this free giving and freely pointing, I think, is what we're engaged in here. Yeah, and a kind of a trust in the Dharma itself, so that it's really none of my business what happens after I die with the Dharma. You know, be interesting if there is an afterlife and I can look back and go, oh no, look at how they're running the temple. But I doubt that will happen. Yes, I'm in hands. Let's see. I think I just saw Brad go up.
Brad.
Okay. I like the fact that Dao Wei came in with a whole new thing to say. He didn't say, well, let's get back to the seamless tomb and where are you on that now? He went in this whole other direction. And I don't know if this is unhumble or something, but I feel like I really like the... I'm starting to feel like... I better not say
this. Now you just have to.
I'm starting to feel like it's my Dharma. It's not like a Dharma that I have to find out that everybody else has found out. Mm-hmm. It has to be mine.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And yet, you know, right. And yet I won't write the book yet. Or ever. But it really feels like it's practice is highly personal. Maybe I'd like to stop trying so hard. I'd like to be more like a cat than a dog, for example.
So, you know, thank you for saying all that. And I think you're right about Dan Yuan. You know, he was not saying, okay, you did lesson one, let's move on to lesson two. He just, you know, okay, you've got apples. Have you seen this orange? Right, and that's really great. I really appreciate that about him too. And it connects for me a little bit with what Anne was saying. You know, we need each other, right? We can tend to focus on the self. A lot of people do. And, you know, this is mine, my Dharma, etc. But there's also the teachers, the Dharma itself. So there's the Buddha, the Dharma, and then there's the community. Like, we can't do this if we're all by ourselves. And if we're just focused on the teacher or the teachings, we can't do it. And if we're just focused on the community, we can't do it. We actually need all three refuges. They balance each other. So if we're missing one, if there's been some kind of idolatrization or idealization of a teacher, we'll never own our own insights, as you're pointing out, I think. And if we think there's nothing to know, I'm going to make a kind of, I don't know, fetish out of not knowing, then we miss a lot. We actually need to learn stuff, and we learn from each other. Consensual reality is important. If we didn't have it, we'd be in big trouble. So it's this constant, we can only say one thing at a time, the other things that are unsaid are always implicit. So this is a new way of looking at things, like, oh, now this, now that. Thank you. Yeah, Jenny.
I like the, I almost see it like a movie scene when he's saying, you know, what can I do? He's kind of like, I love you and you're going to go away and I'm bereaved in advance. and how can I honor you? You know, like this real sincere. And he says, build a seamless monument. He's like, good, a project. Give me the specs. And then there's a long silence. Like there's this expectation and this silence for a long time. And it's like, oh.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's so vivid.
Thank you. You made it vivid for us. Yeah, Anne.
Thank you for the talk, and see if I can articulate that. The image of the eventual monument. I feel like there is, to me, there actually is a connection. It's like we don't understand it at first. Like, how can a monument not have, you know, structure? But then we see, there's all this like sort of vast generosity that, you know, especially in our world where there is always played out that there's not enough for everybody. And to me, it was like this beautiful image of like, there's room on the boat and there's like enough for everybody. And even a crystal, like it's so multifaceted that it has no boundaries. So to me, there was this connection. It just took time and often someone else to articulate what the older teacher's vision might be. So that, I don't know. But it was so beautiful in like there will be enough for everybody somehow.
Yeah, and I think the second teacher is not making a different point from the first teacher, right? I think that's what I hear you pointing to. That this is, we're not starting on another koan. we're still working on the same one. We're still entering here. And of course, what we're entering into is not outside us or some other place.
And I love how you presented, or you started to touch on the seamlessness of the tomb and this structure, right? And so how the mind fragments what life presents as whole.
Indeed. Yeah, Deb.
Thank you so much. I felt like my heart just like felt like this well of sadness and gratitude. Like the emperor wants the Dharma, and I just like really felt the emperor just being there, and you know, like I don't know, it just really struck me that that kind of deep feeling for the Dharma, and I just feel like, wow, we get to do it here too.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my goodness. Well, I think that's a wonderful place to end. Because we really do. All right, let's put the Zendo back together and come back to our sitting posture.